Welcome everyone to Awaken Talks. We'll soon start the Awaken Talks for today, a conversation with Vipul Sahar. Thank you, all of you, for joining Awaken Talks from wherever you are. A very warm good morning, good evening to all of you joining from all corners of this globe. Today, we are going to be in conversation with Vipul Sahar. And just to invite all of us into our present moment awareness, I would request you to slip into a minute of silence as we start this conversation. A warm welcome to all of you as we go into a minute of silence. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. And a warm welcome again for joining us for this Awaken Talks this morning here in India with Vipul Sahar on the topic of journeying back to the roots. As we start this conversation. I'm so happy to invite all of you to Awaken Talks. It's an online platform that we have to talk to change makers who are working at the intersection of their inner journeys, their inner work with their outer work. And we are happy to invite Vipul Sahar, our today's guest, for this. Awaken Talks is constantly endeavoring to talk to change makers who inspire us with their life stories, with the experiments that they do in their life, in their inner work, as well as outer work. Today, as we start our conversation, I would like to invite a volunteer from Baroda, Bhumika, to offer a beautiful song as we start this. Over to you, Bhumika.
I see trees of green, red roses too, I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day and the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people coming by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry, I watch them grow, they'll learn much more than I'll ever know, when I think to myself, oh, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, oh, what a wonderful world.
What a beautiful way to start the day. Thank you, Bhumika, to bring your positive energies to this talk as we start. And indeed, this kind of atmosphere is required. All of us are going through, the world is going through a tough time, right? With the virus again raising its head. And I'm sure all of us have within our immediate or extended circles, someone or the other who is afflicted by the virus. I send my prayers to all the people of the world, as well as to our circles, the people who are affected by the virus, so they can come out of it soon. As we start this conversation, again, a warm welcome to all of you and a warm welcome to Vipul on this community, on this channel of Awaken Talks. And a welcome seems a sort of a little bit inapt for Vipul. He is, in a way, a seeker, someone who is a volunteer at heart. And these are the values that he lives by. and that makes them nothing but a part of our community. So in some sense, there is so much of resonance with values, with the way Vipul has lived his life so far. And it is in honor of these values that we share space today talking about it. Vipul is a youthful, energetic person from the village of outskirts of Pune, Maharashtra. And he has gone through in his short life a full journey of wanting to be an aspirational urban kind of for a first aspirational urban life. His aspirations have taken him to the West in Ivy League schools like the Harvard, where he has studied with the best minds. And yet, after all this, his mind returns and he happily takes over the identity, wears the hat of a person who is from the village, a small village of interior Maharashtra. So it is this journey of Vipul that we would be talking about. We are hearing the voices of constant urbanization, as if urbanization is a one-way street and there is no coming back to the roots, so to say. And people like Vipul offer us an alternative to this rage towards urbanization. We want to kind of unpack that in this talk and see if there is indeed a way or a response to the challenges of urbanization, to the challenges to the greening, and so on. So we will engage in conversation with Vipul on that count. Vipul was also an educator. He has volunteered and has been a part of fellow of Teach for India. After that, his love for education, his love for learning as a process, and his love for children has taken him to Krishnamurti School. And I should add, his love for a green world has taken him to Krishnamurti School, the Valley School, where he taught environmental science. So he has an insight into the process of learning, into how kids learn and what gifts they bring on their own, what gifts are inherent to the kids. So we'll talk a little bit about the educational process and the process of education of the heart, if at all there is one. And finally, I would say Vipul is at heart a volunteer and a tinkerer, someone who experiments, with the values that he lives and how to apply these values on day on, into daily life, which I feel is quite a bit of a challenge for all of us, right? How do these values speak to our daily life? How do these values translate when we interact with our immediate family? How do these values translate when we interact with existence around us, with nature around us? How does it make us a good son, a good child, a good father, a good husband, and ultimately a good citizen? Or is there any value to being a good something at all? So in this wide canvas of a conversation with someone who has packed a punch in a relatively short life on this planet so far, we would like to invite all of us to this, I would say, somewhat a free-flowing talk with Vipul. And I'm so happy he's here. He's one of us. We've known him for years. And I think in this open space, a conversation around values rather than around individuals, a conversation around what could, you know, our path and our seeking rather than making an idol or an ideal is possible. And Vipul exemplifies that, and we are happy to have him here. So this is, I would say, how far words can go in introducing this theme, in introducing our speaker for the day. And we welcome you, Vipul. And I would like to give, you know, you can take it over the way you feel appropriate. Please tell us about yourself, about your early influences, and about your life journey in a way that suits you the most. Over to you, Vipul.
Namaste. Good morning, everyone. What an honor. Thank you so much, Rahul Bhai. That was really a very, you know, heartwarming introduction. And Bhumika for that wonderful song. Really, what a wonderful world. I woke up this morning to cooling showers, and it felt like the nature is all like dancing with joy. So that's how the morning started. And I was really excited to really reconnect with this Mood by Love family. It's really been very instrumental in cultivating the heart space for me. So very, very joyful to be here. I thought it would. I would love to invite all the people on the call today for a short practice, a mindfulness and a visualization practice before I begin to share about my journey. So just requesting everyone to take a comfortable sitting posture wherever you are. Just allowing the body to relax. If it feels okay, we can gently close our eyes. And just feel the ground, the Mother Earth beneath us. Feel our feet touching the ground. And imagine there are roots growing through our feet into the earth, getting a sense of firm rootedness, a sense of stability, and a sense of gentle holding that's available to us through this contact with our dear Mother Earth. Just grounding ourselves and trusting in the support. Allowing all the muscles of the body to simply relax and let go of any tightness or holding, any sense of control. We may even take a few deep, long, intentional inhalations and release through exhalation. And see if through this contact with Mother Earth that our feet are making, just get a sense of our interconnectedness. We may be geographically located in different locations around the world, but there's something that's all holding us together. This force of gravity, the force of love that the Mother Earth offers every moment. So being together in this space, being rooted, being interconnected. And from this space, I would like to invite us to our childhood. Maybe we can bring our attention to a heart space. Can even place one of our palms there if it feels comfortable. And just let's bring alive some happy memories from our childhood. Just invite ourselves to moments that brought us a lot of joy as a kid. Things that we really enjoyed doing. Spaces that we enjoyed exploring. People that showered us with love. Questions that we held as a kid, and just see if any images, any memories come alive in our heart space. And how was it? Maybe we zoom in on a particular story from our childhood, particular time where we really embraced something with utmost joy, utmost passion and love. Could have been when we were 4, 5, 10, or even as a teenager. And let's bring alive this memory as if it's happening right now. We are in it. It's very much here. That child is very much here within us. Notice the finer details of it, the sounds, the colors, the people, the spaces, the smells. And with that, see and notice what it brings up in our heart space, what feelings and emotions it evokes for us. So we are in our childhood and we are really enjoying something. Just see what it brings up in terms of the emotions. How do you sense it in your heart space? Just breathing into it. And whatever comes up is okay. It might bring up more joy, might bring up new hope, some sense of energy or expansiveness. It might even bring up some sadness or nostalgia. It's all okay. We're just touching back into our childhood. Just allowing ourselves to make contact with the child within. Just taking a few more moments in silence with this, whatever came up for us, giving ourselves a very warm embrace, this little child in us. And slowly beginning to transition back into the circle. Taking a few deep, long breaths, just looking around, welcoming this child also in the circle. So I would have loved to hear what it brought up for some of you at least. But for now, I'll share why we started with this activity or mindfulness exercise. So I'm just requesting Rahul Bhai to screen share the first slide. Thank you everyone for just staying through this experiment. And as I was offered this topic, I was at first quite amazed why this was chosen. And it what it brought up for me was my childhood. And because outwardly there's so much in the journey, so many varied experiences. So it may look very different, but the underlying theme or the thread that's been there is this quest to find out, who am I? What really is my unique gift and purpose? And so here I share this slide, something I recently came across from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It says, you are what your deep driving desire is. As your desire is, so is your will. As your will, is, so is your deed. As your deed is, so is your destiny. And that really sums up in a way what has been the driving force in this journey for me. These pictures I've taken from recently terrace gardening, some beans I had planted, and just noticing that seed sprout into a little bud and then later turning into a sapling was such a joy. But this is symbolic of, for me, like when I think of going back to the roots, I realize for me it's really coming to my deepest, truest essence. What are those seeds I was born with? You know, what was my pure essence as a child? And also it is to come closer to the roots of my own family, to the land where I was born. And much later, as I began to explore further, the journey is also coming back to the roots of the civilization, the Indian civilization in which I was born. So there's multi-layered journey here that kind of brings it together. But as I did this exercise for myself, I realized as a child, I was so fond of trees and gardening and spending time out in nature with extended family. Could you share the next slide, please, Rahul Bhai? So it's got pictures of my grandparents and oh, later. So I grew up in a village and yeah. So it brought back how I grew up as a kid who had this quest. I would go spend time with my grandfather and ask him a lot of questions around, as a 5-6 year old, questions around life after death and karma and you know, heaven and all these concepts. I would insist him to tell me stories from, you know, the Jain mythology at the time. And so those sanskaras were there. And but in the process of when I was 5-6, when the time to go to school came, there was a part of me that just resisted that. I just didn't want to go to school. And one way or the other, they made sure that I comply. And I remember very distinctly how an aunt kind of, with all good intentions, she was like, if you don't go to school, we are going to send you to the farm and we are going to, you're going to have to take care of the cows and, you know, the buffaloes. So that was like, I was scared, you know, as a kid. And I went to the local village school. My father consciously chose to send us to the village school so that we learn in Marathi language. And the idea was to be rooted culturally, like to be growing up in the local cultural context. These pictures are like my younger brother on the left. Then on top is in our sugarcane field, we as kids eating sugarcane. And the bottom right is a picture with Baba Amteji and his family. So there were sanskaras of that time of being in the village. But somewhere in the process of schooling, I felt quite derooted from my pure essence. Yes, thank you for the next picture. So these are some early influences where, for me, my grandfather was my hero. He was my best friend. So if you can see on the top right, me as a baby almost sitting in his lap and asking him to you know, share stories. And he was a freedom fighter. He worked along with Mahatma Gandhi in the freedom movement. And so he shared stories of, you know, his youth, 18, 19 year old, when he took the decision to plunge into the freedom movement. So that continues to inspire me. What is the call of our times? And what gave him that courage? And his entire life embodied that courage, that fearlessness, that simplicity that he had imbibed as a young volunteer in the freedom struggle. There's a picture with, and the picture in the middle is when he was sent to jail. He spent 2 years in jail. So that continues to inspire me still. This is grandma at the top, at the bottom right, and I continue to spend time with her. She's still around, and she's, during lockdown especially, I was so blessed to listen to stories from her farming. Both of them farmed all their life, and singing devotional songs with her, and just really tapping into traditional wisdom that our elderly still hold. My brother and I, in fact, felt inspired to start. We thought, like, why not share her wisdom with the wider world? So we were inspired to do that. And through grandfather, I was quite influenced to explore Mahatma Gandhi and his philosophy. His Hindu Swaraj has been very instrumental in the journey. After 10th grade is when my father sent me off to America as a cultural exchange student. And that was another, in a way, like as a 15-year-old, another time when this young sapling felt derooted in a way, you know, to be completely from a village in India to a rural, a small town in Minnesota to be, you know, I was quite influenced by that 1 year, quite glamorized by the West. And it was quite disorienting coming back to India. But as they say, a fish doesn't know what water is until it's taken out of water. It's something like that, what started happening to me. Like, who am I? Those questions became really, what is my true identity here? So I was, as a young child and a teenager, I was very, I felt very lost, very confused, very empty actually, because in school, I moved away from nature. I moved away and I really complied with books and exams, and academic achievement became the only success in life for me at the time. Could move to the next. So just a quick overview of some of the formative experiences. I would say the most defining moment for me arrived as a 16-year-old when I attended my first Vipassana course as a 17-year-old teenager's course in the presence of Acharya Goenkaji. And it took something deep within. These questions didn't were no more just intellectual or logical, but something deeper shifted. And I had a glimpse almost to say of this sense of oneness and real expansive love for all that's around. It didn't last for too long, but having touched into something deeper like that, like the ego melting, life was never the same. And so outwardly, while the journey has been very diverse, the strong anchor and constant has been the practice, the daily meditation practice. On the right is also this organization that I got involved with as a youth volunteer called Initiatives of Change. In this picture, we are practicing multi-faith prayer together. This is based in Panchkani. Yoga also arrived as a very precious gift right after college. I studied business and I chose to take a year, gap year after my, because I was still figuring out what is, who am I really, you know, the most authentic expression that I can find for myself in this world. And it wasn't easy. So instead of just jumping into a job, I felt, and luckily parents supported that at the time. So during that gap year, I did a yoga program studied naturopathy, stayed at a naturopathy ashram, traveled across India through Jagriti Yatra, and also worked with Ashoka Youth Venture on social entrepreneurship as a key. But more lately, my love, and I've begun to realize, and I'm sure many of you would agree, the depth of this ancient science and practice, not just as an asana, but as a way of life. More recently, I'm also really trying to understand Ayurveda and its importance in our overall well-being. So yeah, well-being actually has become a driving force as well in recent times. Then I joined Teach for India, which again was a life-changing experience, the two-year fellowship in Pune. These are pictures, some pictures with my students. Yeah, I just turned off the video to save bandwidth, but I can turn it back on. Teach for India was the first time ever I felt I broke out of my privileged bubble. You know, I grew up quite privileged despite in the village. This was the first time I stepped out of that bubble and really got the opportunity to connect and contribute in a different setting. These kids became a family. It wasn't a job or a fellowship. It was 24/7. The picture on the right is at the urban ashram when we had a laughter yoga session for them. And so we did a whole bunch of fun experiments, but this was the first time something became clear to me that for me, it's the love for children and the difference one can make by working directly with young hearts and minds. So that became much more clear. And I wanted to study further. I felt like I want to understand how learning happens, which took me to Harvard and gave me a lot of good exposure to different theories of learning and what's best out there. But I think like a boomerang, I came back to India very quick because I started questioning the very basis of education, the very purpose of why we educate and how it fits into the larger socioeconomic narrative of today's times. So that brought me to, read J. Krishnamurti's writings on education, Gandhiji's Nayi Taleem, Sri Aurobindo, Swami Vivekananda, Rabindranath Tagore, all the gems that we have in India who have thought deeply about what holistic education is. And sorry, I'm just gonna give me one moment. So I came back to India to really tap into our, the roots of this wisdom and set off on an unlearning journey. Lived with indigenous communities in different parts of India, including in a village in near Baroda for 4 months. And I turned off my phone, my computer, and just worked on land, directly hands-on. And I realized how much in the process of my education, I had kind of moved away from, my heart and hands. So I called it the journey from Harvard to heart work. And it was really eye-opening for me. It's something really transformed deep within. Not that I could turn into full-time farmer or a completely land-based, person, but it created this deeper aspiration for a more holistic balance. And this is from J. Krishnamurti School, where I taught environment. I taught at both the Sahyadri School briefly outside Pune and the Valley School outside Bangalore. Just few glimpses into our classes where most of my classes used to be out in nature, in the forest, sometimes on trees or under trees. This picture on the right is when kids are, offering a burial ceremony to a bird that they had found on a silent nature walk, a gift circle. So the classes became not just the technical exam oriented preparation. And these words, flowering in goodness, flowering in love and goodness, and awakening of intelligence, this is the invitation that Krishnamurti really is offering to each educator. Like education, not just to fit into society as it is, but for a human being to really flower in his fullest expression, in fullest goodness and love and potential, really. So I'm happy to talk more about what I really learned from all these children, really. I went there as a learner, as a student. And we had a lot of fun too. And the most recent discovery for me has been, it actually brings all of it together. As in professionally, I've started holding one-on-one listening spaces based on mindfulness as a practice, and holding circles, facilitating workshops for young people. And that's really offering a deep sense of purpose. And I find that that there is a lot of potential for this to be taken into education, mindfulness practices in schools with our teachers. Yeah. So that's it. I think that was the last slide. And this, I thought to include a recent painting I made because it kind of symbolizes how I feel right now. It feels like a dance, you know, it's like surrender to the flow of emergence, and there's greater trust. Just once. Yes, so that was it. We can move into some conversation or question answers. That was this a quick overview.
This is a good kind of a dip into your life's journey so far, Vipul, and it kind of gives us a rich tapestry of all the places that you've been to, all the experiences, and in a way, not just the journey of different places, but the journey, your soul has taken, you know, wanting to experience these various things. A lot of it is relatable. A lot of it is about finding the you within. And that is what is relatable to a lot of people listening into this conversation here. Thank you for the initial dive into, you know, the mindfulness. I really, some of the moments of my childhood came really alive to me. And then to dip into this life journey of yours, I was just struck at various things, and, you know, your grandfather's journey and how he lives on, you know, if someone has volunteered with head, heart, and hands, and that journey and the roots that you know, that journey develops are kind of timeless. They jump across generations and live on, right? One is to see, say that there is a freedom struggle and there is a soldier fighting, you know, at the border, and there is nothing to demean a soldier fighting at the border. But a life which is steeped into values and volunteering for a cause, not just a freedom struggle, but for the purification of his own mind, which your grandfather would have undertaken, is living on in the first generation through your father. And I got a chance of knowing what a rich life your father is living, consciously wanting to spend time in a rural setting. And in his early 60s, he's already 25 years into managing a sort of an old age senior citizen facility in the outskirts of Baramati. And very recently, he has completed almost a 2,000 kilometer walk, purely relying on the generosity of strangers from somewhere in Pune or outskirts of Pune to a shrine of Jain tradition in Bihar. So all of this, you know, that we see, the variety, the diversity of experiences that you have sought as a part of your life, we are able to relate when we see your grandfather's life, your father's life. And I would like to start with that question that, of course, your slides give us a deco into experiences and your childhood and what shaped, you know, your youth. But is there some story that comes to your mind of your parents or of your grandfather or grandparents that is alive and kicking, which kind of set you on your path? And if you would like to share that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And it's a very personal story of, with my grandfather that just comes spontaneously right now, and I'm gonna attempt to share it. But I spent a lot of time with him as a kid. I would ask him a lot of questions all the time about the very existence of our life here, and a very affectionate person. In his last, I happened to be there, you know. He and my grandmother both had decided that they wouldn't want to go to the hospital. They want to, my grandma's still around, but like in Jain tradition, they gradually reduce the food intake and have a lot of niyamas, you know, just having fruits now, only having one meal a day and all of that. So he lived a very moderate life. And as he approached his last, he was still very much healthy, very, in his senses, very present in a way. And the entire family was there. And as we were witnessing, I remember sitting at his feet. And as I saw him breathing his last, there was no sense of sadness or pain or grief, but it was almost like a transference where his entire life came alive for me in that moment. And I felt like, grandfather, I promise you that I'm going to carry forward the mantle, the life of the principles that you've lived. I promise you to do justice to that, all the inspiration that you've left behind. And it wasn't thought through. It was just that very moment, it just popped up. And that very week, I had my interview for Teach for India Fellowship, I guess in a day or two. And I applied. I felt this is the movement of our time. I want to really channel my skills working at the grassroots. And with that passion, and I think he, in a way, offered his blessings. I'm so glad I did the fellowship. It really set me off on the path of understanding education, working with children, and finding the child within me.
Wow. That's a beautiful story. And in fact, a wonderful inheritance, right? Inheritance of values. And that is not something which is imposed, but something which is blossomed through the practice of his values through his life. And as Gandhi would say, his experiments with truth, in a way, with deep sincerity, and it doesn't fail to move others around you. So that's sending a prayer to your grandfather's spirit. I'm sure he is seeing somewhere this conversation and smiling. And as I was looking at the other shift, you know, and in a way, a shift which your father gently nudged you by saying that you're going to be in a school of the village. At that point in time, maybe 30 odd years back, he could have put you, like most aspirational people would, into a city school, you know, in something which he felt would guarantee you a great life. And yet he chose for you to be in a village kind of a setting. And that, in a way, became a sort of an opportunity for you to see, you know, these different roots of your own life, of the culture and so on, in a way, put a seed, maybe not directly. Of course, you had, your journeys outside to the west, to the cities and so on, and you came back. But certainly this decision of putting an impressionable child in a village school would have played its part, and you got an opportunity to see village life very closely. And now, if I were to look at, you know, I have been born and brought up in city, and if I were to look at a basic difference between a village life and a city life, is that village life, in a way, thrives without transactional behavior. There is transaction required to run our practical life, right? Not everyone does everything. So therefore, there is going to be an exchange of goods. There is going to be an exchange of services. There is going to be some exchange of energy somewhere. But there is a system beyond the transactional, beyond the money system, which villagers are able to avail of these multiple forms of capital. So in some ways, I feel that village exemplifies this economy, which is beyond the economy of money. Whereas city life, in a way, puts all its eggs in this basket of transactional behavior, epitomized by money as a store of value. And there are advantages to both. You know, if you want to grow, if you know you're GDP focused, and I know you have some experience working in Bhutan, which is in a way experimenting with the GNP focus. But if you have to grow in the traditional sense, you've got to have a sort of a metric to measure. And you know, money gives that, growth gives that, numbers give that, versus village, which kind of tries and spreads its basket. So what is the advantages, disadvantages in our flyer to this conversation? We said, you know, what would draw a youth to a urban kind of a life? And in a way, you've experimented a bit. So mix of questions here, but what are your thoughts?
Sure. Yes, yes. This is a very important question, because what I see right now in my village, first of all, I'll start off with what education is doing in the village, or like just in general. In fact, like I became an export material, like in my own village, I feel often still like a non-resident villager. You know, it takes you off the land, off your cultural context, and puts you in this abstracted kind of setting. And you're learning all about the world out there, but not so much about your own roots, about your immediate reality. So kids begin to start thinking that, you know, and now the media is so influential. So all the glamour and the growth and sort of material aspiration kind of takes them. And economic forces too, economic pressures, with farming becoming more and more difficult with so many variables like the climate change. Yeah. So I get a sense of nostalgia when I'm in the village, because a lot of young people, the moment you kind of, I scored top in all my exams, and all the kids who were like toppers, and we in my school, there's a list of them, and they all, none of them, I would say, live in the village. They're all in different places. So it's almost like villages are exporting not just raw materials and natural resources, but the local youth talent. And it's very hard. Like, I've had the luxury and support to try and continue to come back to the village. Luckily, my parents have still continued to be rooted very close in a close-knit village community. So I have that base. And I like the word that you have put in the poster, rurbanization. So I see it as the need of the hour, where the village youth can be empowered to feel, you know, they can have self-reliant livelihoods in the village itself. It's not so much of how much you're earning, but the quality of life one can have. The best of both, can the best of the urban life and rural life coexist? And some of the elements in a rural or the village I see is just the clean air, water, a lot of leisure, a lot of social support system. Just a lot of talent, that is a lot of potential that's there. And for young people, if somehow they are mentored and offered opportunities to create innovative livelihoods, so not just farming, but maybe something along with that. You know, there are so many great examples that come to mind, so many organizations acting as champions, community champions, not as trying to change the villages and turn them into cities, but, you know, as like village youth offered the right kind of exposure and orientation can make good use of technology. So a couple of my friends in the village right now have turned to organic farming, and Pune is only a couple hours drive, so they have found market there. So with the right kind of technology and exposure, another one with lockdown, a lot of them moved back and started working from home, you know, some of them in IT and all. So now they're able to also contribute to family. One of them has started his own company, you know, staying in the village, but he is creating software for clients in America. So there are these possibilities happening. Actually, there's a lot of longing to come back, because village youth otherwise is like neither in the village nor in the city. We are like lost souls in between somewhere. So what would motivate is for people like us who kind of see the value in both worlds and can become the bridge, can become the mentors, can find our own unique sort of support in getting them on their own, you know, feet. There's so much talent or dormant potential there. NGOs like, or villages like Mendaleka come to mind in eastern Maharashtra, which have become very self-reliant in decision-making. And I see the example of my father, who became that community champion when he was trained as an architect, and he could have very well settled in Pune, but very consciously came, and he was the first architect in the region. But in the process, he's like, you know, revived the local sacred grove, you know, created a forest hill in the village, or is running this elderly people's home. So many different ways he is very actively contributing to the socioeconomic life of village. So that's been really the inspiration for me. Not that I have made that journey completely yet. I continue to, it's like a spiral. I go and I tag along with my father. I'll more shadow him and, like, you know, try and contribute wherever I can. So
no, I see what you're saying. It's a constant, in a way, iteration. And the fact that this iteration and this experimentation is happening gives hope to people. You know, so many of us, especially after seeing the movie Three Idiots, felt you should follow your heart and become a wildlife photographer, right? And I'm just saying that in jest, but I mean, so many want to go back to their roots, but are lacking some conviction, at times an example, and at times a sort of a structure or some sort of economics to help them make their decision. And such examples, in a way, help. I hope technology, like you said, becomes some sort of a bedrock and an equalizer for someone to take that call. And this is great. I mean, I would like to move on to another question on education, which has been another important component of your life's journey. And before that, I would want to invite audience to post their queries on the chat box if they have logged on through the Awaken Talks channel, or if you are using YouTube, then you can email us your questions for Vipul at ask@servicespace.org, ask@servicespace.org. And we will, in the last few minutes of this conversation, channel these questions from you to Vipul. And yes, we look forward to hearing from you. So Vipul, my second question, largely on your journey on education, is you spoke of the blossoming of the heart, and you spoke of blossoming of the intelligence, you know, and Krishnamurti uses that word with discretion as against intellect, which is like the body, the brain prowess, right? And this intelligence, which kind of is a confluence of head, hand, heart, and spirit, is something which arises on its own. And on the other hand, the entire effort of Western education system is to cultivate, you know, the brain. In fact, one would even say that even any sort of molding of children would require some sort of a cultivation, a practice, and an effort. Whereas if you see the way Krishnamurti articulates it, it is as if it is a blossoming which happens with spontaneity on its own. To someone who does not understand this wholly, probably this seems like a contradiction. that there is this blossoming, which is supposed to happen with spontaneity. And if we are doing any sort of effort to cultivate it, then we are tinkering with that process. So in a Krishnamurti school, or in your understanding of the education of the heart, is there space for cultivation? Is there space of practice? Is there space for effort? Or how do you view this as you kind of experimented and experienced children learn?
Thank you for asking that question, because I've really been inspired by Krishnamurti's vision on education, and he's asking nothing short of a radical fundamental shift in human consciousness as, you know, a potential for education. It's not just creating livelihoods. So the ask is big, but he, you know, the beauty of his vision is that he doesn't give a roadmap. He doesn't give like do's and don'ts as such. There's no set, you know, rigid curriculum that he kind of left us with. So it's really left for each conscious adult in the community. And he keeps saying, reminding us that it's the educator, it's the parent who needs education. And by that, it means the educator to really see for him or herself the roots of his conditioning, you know, all the influences that have formed us. And am I free as an educator at a psychological level? Am I established in love so that it would naturally ripple out? So when I stepped into these environments, I found it to be such a golden opportunity to understand myself. To go there as with a beginner's mind, with a learning mind, with a child. And I would say children teach us so much if we approach it that way, instead of, you know, feeding knowledge and information. Can we create and hold a receptive field where learning blossoms? Of course, there's the data and the textbooks and all of that, but the fundamental is the relationship that you nurture with each child. And in that, as again, just borrowing words from Krishnamurti, in the mirror of that relationship, one begins to understand oneself, see oneself. I would say, I would go a step further and say, in fact, kids are very attuned and they're already in love. You know, they're very creative, they're spontaneous. I found a lot of hope working with young minds, because I feel they sense something around what's happening with environment. They were the ones who would hold me accountable. You know, Vipul, when you traveled to Pune, did you fly or did you take the train? They were the ones who would ask me those questions. So just working with that love, I think once there's love, deep love for nature or for any subject matter that you're teaching, the technical, the logical will come. Kids will find tools and strategies to, you know, to even meet the basic requirements of an exam system. But one can go much beyond once one is inspired by that love in that setting.
Is there a story, and I know I don't want to put you on a spot, but is there a story that comes to your mind in your, you know, interaction with children, which kind of exemplifies this children being rooted in love, or of let's say, what I see here clearly is that there can't be education of the heart without heartful educators. So there is no way out. The teacher can't really be outside that group, right? Teacher is a part of that circle. So, you know, something which kind of comes to your mind in either of these contexts.
This one girl comes to mind in class 8th or 9th, and like on campus we had a lot of dogs, and this girl was very fond of dogs, and when, you know, her parents had come to pick her up, and they are in the car, and you know, they're about to go back home from school. And then she asks her father to stop the car, and he's in a rush. And she asks him to stop the car, and gets down. And what she finds is there are like these puppies that are like dumped by the roadside. And she kind of picks them up, gives them water. And then she asks dad to find out which local, you know, organization can adopt them or can take care, and make sure that that happens. And she, like, you know, no listening to dad. This had to be the priority. So that really stood out for me at the time when, like, for me, that girl exemplified that love for, like, just another being, you know, the compassion. Similarly, so many children used to take care of the dogs, the plants. They were, like, naturally attuned. When we went to the Himalayas, for example, without us teachers telling anything, we are climbing for 5-6 days and children are picking up all the trash on the way, all the plastic. So many sack loads of, like, on top of the luggage that we already had to carry, kids are themselves, you know, picking up. So that sensitivity was very inspiring to me as, you know, an adult, actually. So many stories, actually, all the time. Like on campus, if I had borrowed someone's motorbike, they would say, you could just walk. So they would always hold me accountable, in a sense. Why are you using motor vehicle? they're really in step with the current consciousness. I feel there's a rise in human consciousness, ecological awareness, and kids are right there. We just need to create opportunities for them to, you know, blossom.
Wow. So in some sense, you know, just provide a fertile ground, a space.
Yeah.
And then don't become, be a part of them, you know, because they look up to you as an example. So in some sense, there is no...
I would quickly add, Rahul Bhai, I'll just quickly add, like, what also really worked was we ran this 21 days kindness challenge with my students in the school, and 21 days of green living challenge that from kindspring.org. And that was really, some kids really took to it. So very inspiring stories came through that. So just having those many experiments, you know, around kindness, green living. We would cook in the forest. So just creating very practical opportunities for children to express their love for nature, for each other. And a lot of silence too, practicing silence with nature.
And that's not difficult That's not difficult with kids, practicing silence, is it?
I won't say much, but yeah, it takes embodying it. So real quick, I could say on days when I was agitated, it could ripple out. I could clearly see the class was haywire. On days when I was centered and grounded, the energy in the classroom was also very different. You know, the kids could also regulate their emotions and thoughts. So it's a beautiful dance, almost like, you know, it's not just the words you exchange, but there's something happening beneath the layer of that. Because they are so pure, actually. Children are very pure, very, you know, I would almost say divine beings. I'm not sure if all parents all feel that way all the time, or all teachers feel all the time. But if one holds that as a belief, you know, then the approach is different. Then, you know, you're always going to work with the best in each heart, best in every kid that he or she has to offer. Yeah.
Wow. You're saying that if on the days when you are centered in silence and in love, it kind of ripples out. And I'm sure it helps take a lot of things in your stride. I am drawn to mention the experience of which I read on your blog about you being bitten by hundreds of honeybees, right? You went to the top of a banyan tree and mistakenly stoked up sort of a honeycomb. And they all came running behind you. You probably dropped your specs. You were 15, 20 feet above the ground, and you got stung by hundreds of bees all over your exposed skin. You had to be admitted in ICU. Mm. So in a way, a love for nature has its pitfalls. I'm just saying that in jest, but
yeah.
How did you process that? And I'm just looking at it from the mirror you offered of when you are in that space of silence everything looks like an opportunity to enhance the depth of that silence. Like they say, if you have a hammer, everything seems like a nail, some sort of an opposite of that, right? Yeah. So would you like to tell us more about that experience, or I would say a near-death experience of actually falling prey to hundreds of honeybees all over your body, being in ICU, not knowing whether you're going to come back in one piece? And what is the role of suffering, in some sense, of misery in shaping our journeys?
Thank you. Yes, that was quite a turning point, another turning point, really. I have this fascination for banyan trees to start off with. I would say, like, I feel like a banyan tree myself. I might have been one in one of the past lives, or if not, I would love to be one in coming lives. But like the title of this talk, Back to the Roots, I feel the banyan tree continues to expand its roots, you know, and that's how I felt. Like wherever I've gone, there's roots that have grown. And so natural connect with that tree. So in very brief, yes, the incident was quite a trauma and shock to the system, physically, mentally, and I'm glad I'm here. But what happened in those moments when I was being taken to the hospital and the pain was unbearable was somehow the whole life came in front, and all the loved ones in life, you know, and I like the relations that I had taken for granted and not had expressed enough love towards. So suddenly what matters in life kind of just, and it wasn't intellectual, it just sort of, it came from a deep, compelling inner force in the heart, you know, like this might be the end, you know, and I haven't even told my mom, like, how much, you know, how grateful I am for what she, like, the love that she's offered. So I really felt that urge to express that love and really value the relationships in the family, all, and all the kids in Valley and all the teachers, the entire community, you know, was praying almost. There was so much, you know, goodwill that I think saw me through that time. And I also felt that there's no point in being traumatized somewhere after 2 weeks. Something in me took me back to that very tree where this incident had happened. And I felt like sitting down, I sat in silence and I saw the dead honeybees still lying, because they die when they sting you. And I felt very sad for, you know, like because of my mistake, they had to sacrifice their life. So I really, very sincerely apologized and just hugged the tree for, I mean, I was known as a tree hugger in the school. And there's, I feel I, since then there's a newfound fascination for honeybees. Like we watched documentary on honeybee with my students. And in our garden, we have a honey beehive. I go and talk to them, sit with them. And just with a lot of, I started painting honeybees. So, and looked at, you know, the importance that they hold in maintaining ecological, you know, our food systems. So there's a lot there, but what it brought out was the deep compassion, a lot of value for life, and the relationships that we nurture in our life. Yeah.
Wow. And I know that I read that you ended the blog with a lot of gratitude for the universe, saying "Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu." You know, it's indeed like that Surf Excel ad that says "Da Achhe Hote Hai." You know, I think even miseries can bring that if they can bring that afterglow with them of gratitude. Certainly, these have their own Midas touches, right? And for such transformative experiences. And building on to that, one, the gift of life itself and the gift of the near ones around us that you felt you probably did not articulate the love for them. That brings me to the practice of quiet time sessions with the family, which you all practiced as a family in the lockdown year. As all of us were holed up in our homes, you chose to be in your ancestral village. In fact, your brother, his wife, and your parents. And you chose to have deep listening sessions with your family over a series of maybe 25 to 30 such sessions. You offered each other that space of deep appreciation for their love, for you, for each other. And oftentimes we see that it is in these near relationships that, you know, we are in a way unexposed and naked. And sometimes that's not a good sight because we have our masks on for the rest of the world, but a different truth is available to the people around us. In fact, that becomes an experiment ground to see whether we have indeed progressed at all on our path. As you pointed out to a quote by Ramdas, I feel I am reminded of that, wherein he said that if you feel that you have realized, then go spend a week with your family. So I want to know a little bit more about your experiments with your family, your practices with your family, your immediate family. And I also want to let you know that there is a lot of appreciation on our feed for the sharing that you're doing. From Udaipur, there are people writing in, and from all over the place that you've been. In fact, Kantesh says that your journey has almost brought tears to his eyes. Gayatri from education, from Udaipur, says it's a joy to share the session. And Vishakha is also writing about how heartful this talk has been for her. But coming back to this practice with immediate family and you know how it can become like an experiment ground for where we are in our journeys. Would you like to kind of share something out of that?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for bringing that up, Rahul Bhai. I think I must also share a little bit about the background to this, because once one tries to do a lot of different things, I realized that one has to go together, you know, because the child in me, the teenager in me, wanted to rebel against schooling and, like, you know, like being forced to go to school and all. So I started as a reaction. There was a phase when I wanted to just be away from family and find my own path. You know, I almost started judging everything they do and, you know, and like I know better kind of an attitude, like having explored like the world, so to say. So it's been a very humbling realization that, you know, we all rise together. We have to invest in each relationship, and it's never easy. But I think the real crucible is our family. That's the training ground. So lockdown, in a way, a blessing in disguise, turned out to be for me, by being like sitting with the fire, so to say, because then you're like all together, and it brings out, there's no escape, because I've been a traveler all my life, past many years, but this, the 20 months that we were together, I was home even before the log, it offered a beautiful opportunity to really push through some of the most difficult, you know, dynamics that get formed over the years. And one starts to, I started assuming that I know everyone in the family and this is the way things are. Mm-hmm. And certain patterns get set. Mm-hmm. So this the opportunity was for us to sit every day in silence together and choose a theme or a topic to reflect upon. Like, for example, we talked about where do I wish to seek forgiveness from family? Mm-hmm. Or what do I feel grateful for in the family? Or what are my dreams? And like, imagine families sitting together and having a visioning exercise, like what's our common aspiration and common vision? So this was a time for reintegration for me. And the journey continues. It's not a tool called Quiet Time, which really invites us to listen to ourselves first and then strike a very heart-to-heart dialogue with another.
Is this something you had done before, or was the lockdown the sort of a...
This is something I actually learned or practiced at Initiatives of Change and Grampari, an organization based in Panchkani.
Did you do this with your family members. Before?
Yeah, but very rarely, very sporadically. So now it has sort of set in as a family culture when important stuff comes up or important decisions have to be made. We, you know, give each other 10, 15 minutes of time. Each one writes in their diary or whatever. My mom just prefers being by herself. But like really sitting down and then speaking from that deeper authentic. So we are not reacting and speaking from a charge. You know, there's a thought that's got into it. And there's more authenticity of like, this is my truth. What is yours? So we all listen. We take turns. We are not interjecting or it's not a discussion. First, it's like a sharing circle. And then we've heard each other. We might have another round of sharing, but then we start to find where it is there's points of differences and where there's point of contact. And we realize that everyone means well, actually, at a fundamental level. At the level of strategy, there might be differences, but everyone really means the bond is that of love and well-being for everyone, you know? And once we can tap into that, then maybe new possibilities begin to open up. So I see that even in organizations. In fact, I would quickly say that my journey in a way, because it's been in diverse settings, has been also that of seeing the paradoxes together, you know, the two opposite, what seems to be opposites outwardly, fundamentally have a common intention in mind. So even on political spectrum, the right and the left, or because in this time of polarization, I begin to see that, wow, actually there's goodness in every heart. Everyone wants well for India. It's just the way everyone sees it is might be different. So the differences of East and West or science and spirituality, or you know, tradition and modernity, urban and rural, these divides become to blur a little bit once one expands one's scope of exposure and engagement or deeper inquiry. So, yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful, beautiful. I think that a space for deep listening can help merge polarities and see the good or distill the good in every on every side. Mm. And also more importantly, how it is material or how it is meritorious to do this in families. And I can see that your family, it is maybe two or three generations in the making, right? The values that you've lived by, not just you, but your father and your grandfather and so on, make this possible to happen. Because as they say, the shortest distance is between the head and the heart. And that's the longest journey. And many a times the shortest distance is between you and your own close real family members, right? Immediate family members. And at times that becomes the most, the longest distance, right? In our life that sometimes we don't even cover. So this is beautiful. And thank you for sharing that. There are some nice questions on the Awaken Talk chat that I will have to toggle. Well, we will probably make it a little quick, sensing the time. Certainly, we can give, we can go a few minutes over 11:30 time. So, Srish is asking, what would you say has been your guiding light while going through and choosing experiences in life from all the variety of experiences you've chosen from? If you could share one practice or tip for one to be more connected to the self, what would that be? And I'm going to toggle between screens, so please allow me that. But yeah, the questions of Srish.
Yes. Yeah, very nice question. Thank you. So interestingly, I feel that the guiding light has evolved over the course of time. Mm-hmm. Like as a kid, the guiding light was my curiosity, which somewhere got snubbed in the process of schooling. Mm-hmm. Then the guiding light became scores, like exam marks. Mm-hmm. Then the guiding light became... you know, success career-wise. And then the guiding light became travel. But I think more recently, the guiding light has really come to understanding oneself, a sense of holistic well-being, and an opportunity to serve. Like, you know, I keep asking myself, is my decision driven by fear, greed, anger, or is it driven by love? So that's kind of, I guess, one test that offer. And in terms of practice, I guess for each one, different practices work. For me, it's the daily yoga vipassana practice, but I would encourage each one to really experiment, you know, arriving at mindfulness, self-awareness. It could be through movement, art, through gardening, so many ways, so many pathways to, you know, just knowing oneself. Could be journaling, deep listening to each other, so many ways arriving at our center. Yeah.
Wow. And a couple of questions again, I'm going to say one breath. Seema is asking, have you ever thought of revisiting your decision of going back to the village, having spurned Hawa? That is one bomb of a question. Have you ever thought of, you know, a rethink on your question of going back to the village? You would. And another question is from Rosha. Rosha is asking, Rashmi Juneja is asking, any tips on how to educate kids at home in the pandemic when they are so deprived of nature and natural surroundings?
Thank you. To the first question, I can say without thinking much that my conviction to live in a village continues to grow by the day, actually. I'm more than convinced that I want to. And I won't say village as just a geographical location. What does it really offer? It's a, and I don't want to romanticize village life here. Like real quick, I would say, what elements of conscious community can we inculcate wherever we are? For me, luckily, there's still the base in a village rural setting, but it doesn't mean the city folks have no chance. You know, it's the movement can be both ways. In the city, can our cities also become villages, you know, small villages? What elements of village life can be brought into our city life? So for me, the real motivation right now and conviction is to co-create a conscious community of people to live with, where there's a sense of trust and belonging and social support, a lot of creative joy and leisure and natural beauty. So, yeah, it's not so much of West and East and all of that. It's more of like conscious community living together. Yeah. Please quickly remind me.
I'll remind that, but just as a corollary to the other question, to this question, Gayatri was asking if this choice of going back to the villages, right, is it offered only to people with privilege? Currently, you know, you are talking about valley school, and there are people who are from the privileged background. So is it just to them? And even there, their questioning of this, you know, asking you for accountability, etc., is it just like a rebellious thought, or does that lead to them changing their life to become more minimalistic, for example, and so on? That's a question that's on Gayatri. If you could respond to that while you are at it, and I'll remind you of the second question thereafter.
The Krishnamurti schools attract more of upper middle class and all, but there are so many other experiments also, so there's a place for every kind of experiment, I would say. And even in fact, I can later compile a list of organizations and schools that are really working at grassroots and bringing the same kind of education to, like for example, Marudam in Tiruvannamalai comes to mind, or Adharshila in Madhya Pradesh, working with tribal children. School Without Walls in near Ratnagiri. So many, or the Nai Talim School in Wardha, Sevagram. So there's a lot of that happening. One has to see where one is, you know, best suited and feeling called really to contribute, responsibility to marry these two worlds, you know, where there may not be access, where we can bring the best elements of all the exposure we have had. And so that's really the longing for me also. Like I feel I owe a debt back to my village in some form or shape. I don't want to be exported out, please. So that's kind of a real silent prayer in the heart. But yeah, one has, it's a journey. And also for city people, I would say, within the constraints of the work life and other family responsibilities, how can one connect to rural India? You know, one may not have a base in the villages, but can one find a way to connect with a farmer on the fringe of a city? Like last weekend, my friends and I volunteered on a farm here. I'm in Tamil Nadu right now in a village, rural setting. And we just offered Shramadana, just labor of love. So just, it brings back dignity in their lives, you know, like someone showing genuine interest in their way of life. And maybe people who don't own land, you know, many people in cities start to think I need to have my own farm, but there could be baby steps in that direction. Maybe for a weekend, we go and volunteer our labor and really connect as equals and learn from each other with a family. So there are many ways of kind of bringing multiple worlds together in our own context. And oh yeah, I remember the question around children and pandemic.
That's nature.
Yeah. It could be small things. I don't know what the possibilities hold in your context. So it could be terrace gardening. It could be, you know, connecting with nature, even in a local park or just on the street. But, you know, there's nature everywhere. Like we do these mindfulness exercises. It could be just looking at the sunset from our terrace. But like, it can be an invitation to step into our own self and have that natural connect. So the child already has that love for nature. How can we just cultivate it within the constraints that we have? It could be just stories from nature. So many possibilities. But I understand it. There's also a limitation to travel and space within the pandemic situation. But, yeah.
Wow, there are quite a few questions, but we are going to halt right now. And thank you for sharing this time with us, a slice of your life. In small ways, your focus is on the small ways in which one can gently change the world. And yet your name is Vipul, which is large, and Shah, which is a king. So in large and kingly ways, you're bringing small ways to change the world, one child at a time, one thought at a time, 1 hour of silence at a time. And that is so beautiful, Vipul, to share this space with you. Is there something you would like to share in maybe a sentence or two as we close this conversation with a minute of silence?
Thanks. I just wanted to say that I'm just a representative or a voice for so many unsung heroes who are really doing a lot of dedicated work on the ground, very invisible in all kinds of, luckily I've had the privilege to be in so many diverse settings, and I am inspired by them. It's not like I've done anything great, but it's just, I feel it's my response. And this, I looked at it as an opportunity to bring those voices in this space. So just with a lot of humble gratitude, I want to really bring those voices or like remember them in this space. It's not me actually. I would invite each one of us actually to find our own ways of connecting with worlds out of our own comfort zones, with nature. Maybe as a teacher in me would like to offer homework, maybe today or in the course of this week, just find time, silence with nature, maybe communicate with a plant or, that's an invitation to everyone. Thank you.
And that's a beautiful invitation, a lovely homework for us for the rest of the week. And I was thinking that, these are difficult times. Almost all of us have got some or the other relative, friend in a hospital, infected with COVID or at home. And here we are talking about the beauties of nature. And I think this conversation makes me realize that both these are a part of the same spectrum. Both this pain and the joy, the beauty, and all of it gets captured in one canvas. And we shouldn't lose sight of that those green shoes. And indeed, this song that I want to offer is, as we close this, is a reminder for all of us, an invitation, as Vipul said, to look at the beauty in every moment, in every signature of nature. So many of you may know the song. I would love if you just join me. It will help. It will help cover all the faults of my singing. Hari Hari Vasundhara Pe Neela Neela Ye Gagan. Hari Hari Vasundhara Pe Neela Neela Ye Gagan. Ke Jis Pe Badalo Ki Pal Ki Uda Raha Pavan. Dishaye Dekho Rang Bhari. Dishaye Dekho Rang Bhari. चमक रही उमंग भरी ये किसने फूल फूल पे ये किसने फूल फूल पे किया सिंगार है ये कौन चित्रकार है ये कौन चित्रकार ये कौन चित्रकार है ये कौन चित्रकार ये कौन चित्रकार है ये कौन चित्रकार है ये कौन चित्रकार कुदरत की इस पवित्रता को तुम निहार लो इसके गुणों को अपने मन में तुम उतार लो चमका दो आज लालिमा चमका दो आज लालिमा अपने ललाट की कण कण से झांकती तुम्हें छवि विराट की अपनी तो आंख एक है अपनी तो आंख एक है उसकी हजार है ये कौन चित्रकार है ये कौन चित्रकार ये कौन चित्रकार है ये कौन चित्रकार है ये कौन चित्रकार ये कौन चित्रकार है ये कौन चित्रकार ये कौन चित्रकार है ये कौन चित्रकार I'll invite all of you to a minute of silence as we close this conversation with deep gratitude to everyone who made this possible including the invisible volunteers behind the scenes all of you in their home in your homes and of course people joining from Anadi outskirts of Madura thank you so much
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.